I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Today we continue with our series on natural solutions for diabetes. My first guest is Dr. Catherine Shanahan, who likes to be called Dr. Kate, and is a board-certified family practitioner and medical director of the Bedford Center for Medical Nutrition in Bedford, New Hampshire. She is also author of Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Transitional Food, and also Food Rules, A Doctor's Guide to Healthy Eating. She uses a diet program that gets diabetics off medications. More information is available at www.trimprogram.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Kate, and I look forward to hearing about how you work with diabetic patients with your Trimline program. First, could you tell us what is medical nutrition?
If you want to heal someone, you have to work with nature, and drugs don't do that. So I prefer to use food. That's, you know, the original, that's what Hippocrates said, is let food be thy medicine. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. That's what how I've defined medical nutrition. You know, after I coined the term, though, and started my program, I found out that the dietitians actually got that term first. They call something very similar sounding medical nutrition therapy. However, they use a lot of supplements and they use a lot of artificial foods like sweeteners, and they don't mind MSG and stuff like that. And I feel that that is not really going to be ideal. So with my program and my advice to my patients, everything I do involves only the use of real food. I also try to minimize supplements. There are a few supplements I do use. Mm-hmm. Those are really just the magnesium and the vitamin D and sometimes the omega-3 capsules, unless somebody's really altering their diet drastically. You cannot get omega-3 very easily. Some people just can't do that. And you also cannot get vitamin D unless you're going to be eating things like liver. Mm-hmm. And in terms of magnesium, there's some evidence showing that since it's depleted from our soil, most of our food is going to be low in magnesium, and so supplementing that would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm really happy to hear a physician say that you can't heal with the drugs, you've got to use something else, and then to move into the nutrition. I think that's wonderful.
Thank you. You know, but that's why I always like to remind people that Hippocrates said it. So this is supposed to be what we are driving towards in our medical education. You know, that's what the founder of modern medicine said. And I don't, you know, it's too bad that we kind of just let that slide, you know, based on the just the standard idea that it's all right if you just don't do that and let, you know, doctors focus on drugs, and that's completely lopsided medicine.
Well, there's a history to the drugs, which I uncovered when I was researching on cancer. And it all involves money and power, etc. And it goes back many, many, many years to the Flexner Report on the medical schools, etc. So I think that not only have physicians gotten very comfortable with the drugs, but the public think, well, there's a quick cure for everything, and so they're comfortable with drugs. But in the end, it's not the solution to most problems we have.
Right, yeah, they call it a cure as if it is, you know, really that. But, of course, you and I, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners understand that it's not a cure, really. It's just a temporizing measure. And, you know, unless you really change the diet, the conditions that led to cancer or whatever other illness we're talking about, including diabetes, are going to continue degrading the body in other ways.
Then, Dr. Kate, what conditions are you treating with medical nutrition?
You know, it totally depends on the age group we're talking about. So as a family practitioner, I see babies and I see people, you know, nearing 100 years old. And since most people these days are consuming toxic levels of carbs and trans fat all day long, I'm seeing people for conditions that are caused by those dietary imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends where you are in your life cycle. And also, and this is really interesting and important, it depends what your parents ate. So when we, my husband and I, who's my co-writer for Deep Nutrition, the book that we, our first book, we are speaking about health, not just in terms of personal health, but actually in terms of genetic health. And so that means that your parents and your grandparents' actions, specifically, you know, how much carb and trans fat they ate and other toxins they may have been exposed to during their lifetimes, affect your genes. And they can affect them in ways that can be permanent or in ways that can be reversible with good diet. But it can cause so many different things. And so what I typically see in the youngest children is allergies. I can tell a breastfed baby versus a bottle-fed baby when they walk into the room, because most infants who are on formula will have something just not quite right about their skin. They may have a little eczema, they may have a little cradle cap, they may have a little acne, but I rarely see that in breastfed babies, and that's because infant formula is very high in sugar, trans fat, and processed proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later in life that we see children that I see, you know, that I'm treating with my medical nutrition, coming to me with allergies of runny noses, recurring colds, asthma, and those are also related to the fact that most children are getting way too much sugar not enough natural fats in their diet because of this low fat kick that medicine got started on about 50 years ago. And I don't know where your listeners are and where you are in that whole, I guess, eye-opening experience of turning up our idea of turning upside down, I should say, our thoughts that fat is the cause of weight gain and, you know, fat is fat, all fats are the same, which is absolutely not true. And partly because of this idea, later in life, we see people gaining weight when they've been consuming the higher carb, high toxic fat diets, so that it's extremely common for women, especially after they start having children, to have more difficulty with their weight, to gain weight real easily, to lose it with increasing difficulty, and this really accelerates after menopause. So that is really the number one draw to my program is weight, because it's something people can diagnose themselves. You know, you don't need to. All you need is your pants.
Right.
And then so later down the road in life, I'm also seeing, and I'm treating people actually with cancers who don't want their cancer to recur. I'm helping people with arthritis. And there's even evidence that dietary intervention can make remarkable improvements in Alzheimer's. So I'm working on all those levels being family practice.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Tell us then, Dr. Kate, about the blood tests that you use and those you don't use and why?
Right. Okay. Very good point. So a lot of people have questions about their nutrition. They want to know if their vitamin levels and their mineral levels are good. And I have to tell them that, you know, unfortunately, we don't have great tests for those things. And you would think that that would be one of the first things that we would go to, you know, when we're trying to evaluate someone's nutrition. Unfortunately, there's two problems with this. One is we never really set a standard. And so that to define, you have to have the standards. You have to know what a healthy level of, say, B12 is going to be before you can say someone is there or too low. But we never really defined a healthy population and identified a healthy population to be able to say, okay, this is clearly the level where below this people have problems and above this people are fine. So that's one problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then another problem with vitamin testing is that most of our vitamins are not really stored in the blood, and that's where we test. Unless you're doing a tissue biopsy, you know, of somebody's muscle or their fat or their kidney or something where, you know, certain vitamins are stored different vitamins tend to be stored in different organs, and there's no way to really measure your body stores in the way that needs to be measured. You're just going to be getting like a snapshot in time based on your most recent diet. It doesn't really tell you, or you know, your most past few meals. So it doesn't really tell you what you need to know, which is your long-term true body levels. So that being said, what I find most useful for blood tests as a really good indicator that somebody's getting into metabolic problems, the number one most important test is a fasting blood glucose level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I look for a number above 90 as an indication of problems. And the cutoff value is still 100, but there's a lot of really good research that shows that ought to be lowered to 90 because once your fasting blood glucose level is at 90, you've already got abnormally high levels of insulin, indicating insulin resistance and metabolic imbalances that lead to the whole syndrome of diabetes. And I've seen plenty of people, actually, who are never diagnosed with diabetes, whose blood sugars are, fasting blood sugars are hovering in the 90s, and they've been there for years, where they already have complications of diabetes, including neuropathy, including kidney problems, including not so often eye problems, but very, very often the cardiovascular disease, strokes, heart attacks, and all that. And this is something that is really, I think, overlooked by doctors, is that the correlation between cholesterol levels and heart attacks and strokes is very, very weak. But the correlation between fasting blood glucose, I have never seen a patient have a heart attack or a stroke who did not have fasting blood glucose levels that were in the 90s or higher. In other words, the converse of that, if your fasting blood glucose level is consistently in the 70s and low 80s, where the normal numbers are, your risk of heart attack is very unlikely, is very, very low. So there's another blood test that I do. And actually, I was just at a real big meeting put on by the Nutrition and Metabolism Society, which is a great source of really good information from peer-reviewed scientific journals by doctors who are specializing in metabolic health and weight loss and treating diabetics and curing them kind of the same way I do with a low-carb diet. But my diet is a little bit different. But so the Nutrition and Metabolism Society meeting, I learned that in terms of lipid levels, the most useful numbers for your cholesterol test is to look at your triglyceride value and your HDL, or the so-called good cholesterol value. And if you divide your triglycerides, say their number is 100, by your HDL, say your HDL number is 50, and you get 4 or lower, you're at low risk. So if you have 100 triglycerides and 50 HDL, your number is 2. So you're at very, very low risk. That's a really good number, if that makes sense. So those two, the fasting blood glucose and the triglyceride to HDL ratio, are extremely helpful in gauging your metabolic health and the degree to which a high-carb diet and a diet containing trans fats, what I call secret trans fats that are not labeled on the label when you look for content of trans fat, those two things are the biggest toxins that we eat on a regular basis, and they will cause metabolic problems in everyone over time. It's just a matter of time and a matter of your particular susceptibilities, whether you're going to get overweight or cancer or an autoimmune disorder or allergies or what. So all of those are diseases that I treat and that can be reversed with diet. It's very rewarding to do all that.
I have some difficulty with my good cholesterol because I'm never able to get it up very high. And my bad cholesterol is always very good. But the problem is getting my good cholesterol up. I try eating walnuts and I try eating the things that are supposed to help. And I walk every day 4 miles, and I do everything that you're supposed to do, but it just will not go up. And I haven't asked my brother. I have a 90-year-old brother who chops wood 3 days a week to stay in shape and grows all his own fruit and vegetables, etc., upstate New York.
Wow,
but
great.
I haven't asked him what his good cholesterol figures are. You know, that might be interesting for me to do. And
yeah, definitely. But I can tell you that, you know, when people have a low HDL, it's very often from following a diet that's low in naturally occurring animal fats. So I don't know if you're more like on the vegetarian side, or if you've been doing the, you know, the lean meats and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But cholesterol comes from animal products, and if we want to raise the good cholesterol, I tell people go ahead, eat eggs, go ahead, you know, enjoy your animal products. Don't overcook them. It's very important. Mm. Very important to know what the animals ate, because that will determine mm-hmm. what's in their fat, whether it's going to have nutrients or not. And it's also very important to pay attention to how you cook it. And so this is a little bit of an area where I'm not sure where you are on that whole thing, but when I started my re-education, as mm-hmm. I call it, mm-hmm. the first issue I had to get straight was breaking through the myth that we doctors learn in medical school mm-hmm. that butter or animal fat has been proven to cause cardiovascular disease. In fact, it never was.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's something that you'd like me to comment on just real quick.
That'd be good.
Mm-hmm. When Ansel Keys, who is the father of the diet heart hypothesis, who was on the cover of Time magazine in the 50s for saying that fat in the diet had something to do with heart attacks,
mm-hmm.
his research was on solid fat, yes, but it was not on butter. It was not on animal fat, you know, that get you cut off. It was not on eggs.
Mm-hmm.
The research he did was using margarine. And if you look at his research, you'll see that actually some of the titles are you know, hydrogenated fats mm-hmm. and cholesterol, and that's right in the title. Yet nobody's ever looked back to say, hey, wait a second, he's not studying the effect of butter on mm-hmm. cholesterol levels. He's not studying whether or not eggs cause heart attacks. He's studying whether or not margarine mm-hmm. causes mm-hmm. heart attacks. And mm-hmm. there's no debate. We know margarine causes mm-hmm. heart attacks. It's loaded with trans fat. It's 50% trans fat in some cases, and trans fat is an unnatural fat molecule. So no surprise, our body, our enzymes can't use it, and it's very unhelpful for us. So that was a real key to me and a real eye-opener. After that, after I saw how it was a huge error, a huge oversight that was built into my medical education, first of all, I was kind of outraged. But secondly, I was able to revisit everything I had learned about nutrition and a lot of things I had learned about biochemistry previous to even going to medical school, when I went to Cornell for biochemistry and molecular biology. And I realized that in the context of our completely wrong-headed idea mm-hmm. of what a healthy diet is, everything about disease needed to be revised. And mm-hmm. so I went through and did that in the book Deep Nutrition. So I talk about health from the bottom up. You know, I talk about how it affects your genes, how it affects your growth, and how the fact that our diet has changed, as Michael Pollan, the author of Omnivore's Dilemma, and in the movie Food, Inc. says, our diet has changed more in the past 50 years than it has in the past 10,000, and how that has impacted on our health has been unexamined so far by the medical community. So that's what we talk about in Deep Nutrition, is from the genes onward, and mm-hmm. so we talk about over generations as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you diagnosed my problem and why my good cholesterol doesn't go up.
Yeah, so let me know how that goes.
Good. But I can't eat beef. I just don't care for beef, so I don't.
Well, you know what? There's so many animal products and butter and everything out there that you can get. There's almost always something you can mm-hmm. find that you like. So I help my patients to do that, to, mm-hmm. you know, we work with their appetites.
Mm-hmm. Great. Then are there other doctors that think about nutrition and the fat and all of that the same as you do?
There is a whole group of physicians who are members of the Nutrition and Metabolism Society, which has a website. So you just type in Nutrition and Metabolism Society, or actually go to my website, drkate.com, and I have a link to it. It's a little globe on the right. And they are totally on board with the whole idea that saturated fat is not the problem. It's the carbohydrates that cause heart attacks and even things like cancer and so on. It's really a fascinating group of doctors that have done a lot of research and, you know, peer-reviewed journals. These are doctors at university institutions like SUNY Brooklyn, the University of Boston, or wait, no, UMass in Boston.
Mm.
One of those. But, you know, a lot of top-notch docs, somebody at Duke as well. And I was actually met them all for the first time, though, this last mm-hmm. month at the meeting in Baltimore. And it was just so gratifying to find that other doctors had come to the same conclusions, were having the same amazing results in getting their patients off medications, and that there was a group of doctors who does believe that food should be the medicine.
Was Mark Hyman there? Or do you know Mark?
You know, I've heard that name, and he might have been.
He's
but
up in New England. I think he's in Massachusetts. And he wrote a book on weight loss, and he's very much into nutrition. And also wrote a book called The Older Mind Solution. And I was trying to interview him on weight loss when I did that series, but he wanted to talk about his book on The Older Mind Solution. So that's what we talked about. But it was interesting also.
So. Yeah, if he's low carb, he might have been there, because that's really what the mm-hmm. group of doctors, you know, if you had to use two syllables to define us all, it would have been all low carb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Katt, how is your program different from the typical low-carb diet?
Well, in my program, I introduce people to basically 10 steps. And I tell them all, you know, if I were to disappear and you can never come back and see me again, I give them a sheet of paper with 10 steps. I call it 10 steps to a healthier body. Number one is cut your carbs, but there's 9 more. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of other information that is part of my program that is not part of the typical low-carb program, although they're not mutually exclusive. But since I spent a great deal of time, well, since I define food sort of differently than everybody else, I kind of had to redefine it as that food is really not just collections of calories, right? And we have this mm-hmm. adage that a calorie is a calorie, but yet certain calories will raise our insulin levels, which makes us put on fat and put on weight. So obviously, there's way more to it than that. So what we define food as is simply this, just information. It is information, chemical information, that directs your DNA as far as what to do, what proteins to express, to create your body, your health, your how you grow. So food is information. So it's not just carbs and protein. And to understand what a healthy diet was, then we cannot start from a place of breaking it down and, you know, how many milligrams of magnesium is a healthy diet. That's never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes is to, because it's too complicated, it's starting from the wrong place. It's not starting from a place of health. We're not smart enough, basically, to be able to measure nature. And that's essentially what we're trying to do when we say, okay, how many milligrams of protein or whatever do you need? So what really we did, what works, is to approach from a different perspective, which is a perspective similar to what a really fantastic doctor back in the 1930s named Weston A. Price. His approach was to go to the places where people were healthy, they did not need medications, they did not develop diseases, and take a look at what they ate. And so Luke and I, when we wrote Deep Nutrition, we did something very, very similar. Weston Price went to about 10 different countries and analyzed their diets
mm-hmm.
and found that he was doing this sort of more analytical approach as well. And so when he broke it all down like that, he said, you know what, they're getting about 10 times the amount of fat-soluble vitamins and minerals in the typical American diet in the 30s. So he found that, you know, what people traditionally did was produce much more nutrient-rich foods. And so what Luke and I did was expand on that idea a little bit. We realized that pretty much any traditional culinary practice is going to be able to create health, because otherwise, if it hadn't, people never would have lasted that long. So, mm-hmm. well, what do I mean by that? When we lived in Hawaii, we moved there in 2000, and I was shocked at how, you know, healthy everybody was.
Mm-hmm.
There were the south side of Kauai where we lived there, the population was highly Asian, and a lot of them were Filipino. And so Filipino workers in the cane fields, Filipino workers in the hotels were doing, you know, pretty intense day labor, day after day,
mm-hmm.
into their 50s, 60s, 70s, and they could just keep going and going. And so I was super impressed with their health, you know, having come from Minneapolis, where it was pretty much the standard American diet, although Minneapolis is in Minnesota, which is the second healthiest state right behind Hawaii. But still, there was no comparison. And I also was invited to several parties, and noticed that they ate completely differently. They ate everything, every part of the animal. And, you know, they had all these colorful things that were made out of animal parts. And, you know, you don't think of animals as being colorful. But they used liver. They used fish heads. They used even fish eyeballs and lots of eggs. And just everything was beautiful and colorful. And I wasn't brave enough to try it, but Luke tried it. And he said it all tasted really good. And so I just kind of realized that people who are healthy are eating things that we're not eating. And so we kind of took a look, we really studied intensively the culinary practices of people in country after country after country, and we found that there's four things that they all do in common, which we call the four pillars of world cuisine. Mm-hmm. And that is what a healthy diet is. It's not so much of a percentages of carbs or fat or protein. That's important to know, but it's really not the whole story. It's nowhere near the whole story. So a huge part of our book, Deep Nutrition, we describe exactly what a healthy diet is, that is traditional food. We define what traditional cuisines are, and they all include those four pillars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your work then with diabetes involves your nutritional plan and exercise. Is that correct?
Yep. That's a very important part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so step number one was cut your carbs. And step number two, and this is really important, is avoiding the trans fats. And now we all know trans fats are bad, but there is trans fat in stuff that is not required to be on the label in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it secret trans fat because of that. And so the way to tell if there's trans fat in your food is not to look for the grams of trans fat. It's to look for ingredients. And if any of the ingredients include a vegetable oil, and I'll define those in a moment, because of the way the vegetable oils are processed, the polyunsaturated fatty acids are damaged by oxidation, and their shape is distorted and twisted, and so they become as dysfunctional as trans fat, and they will have all the health-harming and diabetes-promoting and weight-gain-promoting effects of trans fats.
Mm-hmm.
And those vegetable oils, the most common are canola, soy, corn, cottonseed, sunflower, and safflower is another popular one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look for those six oils, that's going to tell you whether or not you're buying a trans fat containing product.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have to look at the labels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And canola is not really made from a natural product. I understand it was named for Canada something or other.
Yeah, I cannot remember. Something about oleic acid, but, I can't remember what it stands for. But, yeah, it's a patented product. It's a derivative of a seed called rape, which is in the mustard family.
Mm-hmm.
But the real reason it's a problem, not just, often it's a GMO product, it's got all kinds of pesticides,
mm-hmm.
but even organic expeller-pressed canola is going to have trans fats because
mm-hmm.
canola is promoted as healthy because it has omega-3,
mm-hmm.
which is true. And that would be great if we could remove the omega-3 from the canola seed without wrecking it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, polyunsaturated fats are not heat stable. And guess what the first step is in extracting the oil from canola?
Mm-hmm.
It involves heat.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the steps is a process called deodorizing, and another step is called bleaching. And both of these are extremely caustic processes, and they also strip electrons from the polyunsaturated fatty acid, and that process distorts it and creates a
mm-hmm.
toxic trans fat.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's promoted as heart healthy because as it is in the seed, it would be heart healthy. Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
that's not what's in the bottle. So.
What are your thoughts on organic foods since you mentioned organic foods? Is that part of your program?
Absolutely it is, yes. And you know what I tell people, though, is if they have a limited budget,
mm-hmm.
I actually tell them, don't waste your money on organic fruits and vegetables. If you have an unlimited budget, great, get everything organic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you get more bang for your buck on organic animal products because of the concentration of toxins as we go up the food chain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that if you're, getting an animal product that was conventionally raised, the soil itself can be loaded with toxins, the feed that the animals get can be loaded with toxins, and then all of that stays in the animal's tissues and bioconcentrates in the fat.
Mm-hmm.
So with eggs, dairy, and any animal meat. Mm-hmm. It's real important to do those organic if you can.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you about stevia. Do you recommend that?
Yeah, that's a real good question. See, now stevia is a natural sweetener that is not artificial. It's not going to have any of the NutraSweet aspartame that can cause neurological problems. It's not going to have any of the potentially cancer or tumor-inducing chlorine molecules that Splenda has or saccharin. However, what it does is typically it's added to starchy foods, which I am not a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not getting any calories saved if you're adding Splenda to cookies, for instance, because you're eating the same size cookie, and that means you're going to be eating more flour, less sugar. So same number of calories, if not even more, because flour is pretty calorie dense. So for that reason, it's not so great. And then the real reason, though, is that it's a sweet thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my diet, I have everybody who participates, if they possibly can, eliminate all sweets for a period of 2 to 4 weeks as a way of waking up their taste buds so that you don't have that. Really what you're doing is you're gaining control over your cravings when you do that, because if you're slave to the sweet, then no matter what diet you're following, it's going to feel like it's difficult. It's going to feel like a diet. And so when you free yourself from that sweet tooth, that addiction, that need to have something sweet, or you don't feel like you've really had anything, you can then be permanently on a road to better health and it's a long-term healthy diet.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Kate, is there anything else you'd like to say about your program or diabetes or whatever before we look at your books and services and how the listeners can reach you?
I guess I would have to say that I would encourage people to really read the entire book and look at my programs then before really starting to make, I mean, you can start making good changes whenever you want, but once you read the whole thing, you really get a better view of why I create the program and shape it and have the recipe ideas on the menus on my website that I do.
Great. Well, then, would you tell us about your books and services and your website and how the listeners can reach you?
Yeah, so I have two websites. One is drkate.com, and that is drcate.com. And that's where my blog is, and I have real easy links to my two books from there, as well as an easy link to my weight loss program. It's on the tab on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And my blog, which is sort of my running commentary on the state of medicine, and, you know, when there's interesting studies that come up that are ridiculously flawed, I kind of get on my grandstand about that. And there's lots of interesting comments, too, that readers have made. And then the weight loss program is my other website, and the address for that is trimprogram.com. So that's spelled T-R-I-M, as in trim body, program, P-R-O-G-R-A-M, all one word there, .com. And at that website, I have links. I have the 10 steps. I have links to menus on another website and information as to how people, at least in New Hampshire area, can join the program. At this point, it's not something I do as consultation online, so it's only limited to people who can physically see me in my office. And then the two books, the first one we wrote, the title is Deep Nutrition. The subtitle is Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. And that really tells the whole story on human health from beginning to end, from the nucleus where your DNA is to your facial structure, your height, and it gives a real long perspective on what health is, so that we say that, you know, a diet has not stood the test of time just because it can create weight loss. Any diet can make you lose weight. Any diet in the short term may appear healthy, but it has to be healthy generation after generation to be able to really be a respectable diet. So that's why we insist on traditional food, as it's right there in the subtitle. And in that book, we really honor the people who have been the best nutritionists all along. That's not the doctors. It's not the naturopaths. It is the cooks and the chefs. Mm-hmm. And the people who've paid attention to, who've been talking about things like the quality of the soil and the seasonality and the freshness and the flavors and all these wonderful things that make us love eating that also give us health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in Food Rules, our second book, we kind of refine some of the pieces of advice that we give in nutrition. We give much more detailed, like step-by-step, here's how you shop, here's how you cook, here's how you eat mindfully so that you don't gain weight, so that you appreciate the food that you're eating. And then there's some doctor's orders in there that pertain to, you know, the things that are really, really key that you need to know about your health before you step into a doctor's office again.
Mm-hmm.
So the Food Rules book is much shorter. It's almost like a little handbook for people who are just getting into the whole journey towards using food as a way to get healthy. And that's a great starting point for a lot of people. And I kind of joke and say, you know, if I give it to a lot of women who want their husbands to read, and they say, if the only place your husband reads is in the bathroom, he'll be able to get through this in a couple months.
Well, I thank you very much. This has been very interesting and will be helpful to the listeners, especially those that want to use natural ways of dealing with weight loss or diabetes or a variety of other conditions that are or can become chronic. So I appreciate this very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I invite you to join me in reading the new fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. This issue, like the fall issue last year, focuses on inspirational cancer stories. Several children with leukemia were included, and one I especially liked was Christopher, age 9. Who is described by his friends as the type of friend everyone would want, smart, loyal, brave, funny, and always a good sport. He was diagnosed with leukemia at age 3 and had a recurrence at age 8. Unfortunately, Christopher died. It is always a pleasure for me to read about Fran Dressler and Sharon Winters, who were also included in last year's fall issue. Fran has been cancer-free for 11 years and wrote Cancer Smancer about her survival. She also started the Cancer Smancer movement and foundation that emphasizes preventing cancer. Sharon Winters, another long-term cancer survivor, talked about the influence of the environment on cancer development and how to prevent it using information from her book, co-authored with Burton Goldberg, titled Survival, A Family Guide for Thriving in a Toxic World. For me, this book was the most comprehensive guide currently available. I was also interviewed for this issue, and you will find more about my story that is being published in a book on surviving lung cancer that will be available for purchase next year. Beyond the many interesting stories of cancer survivors and sufferers, I was interested in information on Farmageddon, about the war on American family farms, and another on local food movements, both which resonated with me. Also of interest was the interview with Peter Shankman, who is the founder of HARO, Help a Reporter Out, the world's largest free source repertory. If you are looking for speakers, guests, for radio shows, conference, or whatever, or if interested in being considered as a speaker guest, this is the place to be. I have used the service and am very pleased with the results obtained. And last, a mention of the music of 2-time Grammy Award winner Jimmy Warnes. You will not want to miss these and other stories in the fall issue of A Distinctive Style magazine, available at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest is Dr. Stefan Ripich, a naturopathic physician and certified nurse practitioner. He practices in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and is the author of The 30-Day Diabetic Cure, which is available as a book and video coach DVD set. He says that every patient who has followed this 30-day program has successfully reversed symptoms of type 2 diabetes. More information is available at www.30daydiabetescure.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Stefan, and I look forward to hearing about your treatment for diabetes. Now, first, Stefan, you are a certified nurse practitioner. Then you became a naturopathic physician. Why did you continue on to receive a second degree in naturopathic medicine instead of practicing with your nursing certification or becoming a medical doctor?
Well, Carl, you know, the thing is that nurse practitioners' scope of practice vary widely from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
Often, it's not necessarily true here in New Mexico. Nurse practitioners require a physician supervisor, and their prescribing privileges may be circumscribed and so on. And I just really felt like I wanted to go the extra distance and become a physician. The thing was, though, that I had practiced for so long in a conventional setting. I understood how conventional medicine worked and so on. And I really wanted to move beyond that, too, and have a satisfying practice which embodied the best of conventional and natural medicine. And when I looked everything over, I found that naturopathic medicine was a better fit for me because of the philosophical differences between those two treatment modalities.
Mm-hmm.
In conventional medicine, I think it's safe to say that illness is viewed as this sort of invader that comes into your body, and you aim everything at this invader, whether it's a bug or a tumor or a number on a lab sheet. You are focused on that. And in naturopathic medicine, symptoms are seen as the body's attempt to accommodate stressors.
Mm-hmm.
We borrow an analogy from traditional Chinese medicine. You know, Chinese medicine doesn't believe in germ theory. They don't think germs cause anything.
Mm-hmm.
They say when the water becomes stagnant, mosquitoes are attracted to it. So in naturopathic medicine, we believe, you know, as long as you're swatting at mosquitoes, whether you are swatting with an herb or a chiropractic adjustment or a antibiotic or surgically removing them or whatever you want to come up with, as long as you're aiming at mosquitoes, you're misguided, we say. We say if you want the mosquitoes to go away, then make the water flow.
Mm-hmm.
And in this analogy, the water flowing is the flow of your innate healing abilities. Your body has amazing powers to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I do is about getting you in alignment so that natural flow of healing can occur. And then the mosquitoes go away naturally. And that's sort of how I approach diabetes care here. You know, is I make the necessary adjustments and things will happen naturally. The diabetes reverses, the weight goes down, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Now, Stefan, why do you think that diabetes has become such a major problem?
Well, it is a major problem, isn't it? You know, the World Health Organization says that soon one in every five people will have diabetes. And the National Institute of Health, which is, you know, a really very conservative organization, says that right now, half of the American men either have pre-diabetes or are on the way to getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is all of this enormous abundance is something which is unfamiliar to our bodies. You know, our bodies have about 10 different ways that they can raise our blood sugar during periods of starvation. There's all these metabolic pathways to keep us going during really rough times. But the body doesn't really have any effective ways of lowering blood sugar when we keep eating such calorie-dense foods. We get overwhelmed by it. And, you know, it's fashionable nowadays to blame the individual and say, oh, they're fat. Mm-hmm. Oh, they have no discipline. Oh, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? It's short-sighted to think that way, because the truth of the matter is diabetes is a symptom of a sick society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a whole society-level problem. You know, those guys on Madison Avenue have really got it figured out about how you'll be driving in your car and you'll see 10 different billboards about food and sundaes and pizza and hamburgers and everything. They got a sense of how to drive your appetite so you are always getting bombarded with messages about unhealthy foods. You know, think about the child who watches television.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting bombarded by messages for sweet, sugary cereals and candy bars and sodas and everything countless times during their programming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you think to yourself, that's not fair. Those kids are the most vulnerable. And that reflects even greater truth about diabetes, and that's that it is epidemic because it is often the people who are most vulnerable who have the least options in terms of turning diabetes around. What do you do when you live in a neighborhood where there is nothing for you except a convenience store?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a study. There are areas in Oakland, California, where you can walk out of your front door and walk for a mile and not be able to buy anything but alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? You work so hard, you come home, your dog tired, you don't own a car. What are you going to do to help the diabetes situation? So there are many, 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 many layers on it. It starts with the natural healing power of your own body to turn it around, but ultimately becomes a call to all people, whether you have diabetes or not, to start making the corrections to our society.
Right. Now, Stefan, you have a book based upon your very successful practice with type 2 diabetes. Can you tell us about your program?
You know, Carl, the thing is that this business of diabetes being a chronic lifelong illness that you manage with medication is a myth.
Mm-hmm.
Those medicines do nothing to reverse diabetes. They just sustain your blood sugars and everything. What's true is that you can make changes that will make a huge difference. But there's a secret to making changes. You know, if broad sweeping changes were possible, we would all keep our New Year's resolutions, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I've developed this program where little by little, inch by inch, day by day, you make changes that will, at the end of 30 days, provide you with the skills you need to have a huge impact on your diabetes. Day one, you got to give up candy, white sugar, pie, cake, cookies, all of those sweet indulgences. A lot of people with diabetes have been taught that they can eat those as long as they cover them with medicine. I don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
mm-hmm.
cut that out.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to do. If you want to have pork chops for lunch, you eat them. If you want to have a steak for supper, I don't care, but all you got to do for that first day is not eat sugar. And keeping all of that, on day two, all you got to do is add in a half teaspoon of cinnamon every day. There's plenty of evidence in the conventional medical literature. There's a study in UCLA. They gave people rice pudding. Half the group had cinnamon on top, half the group didn't. The group who had cinnamon didn't have a big blood sugar spike afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So on day two, all you got to do is add in cinnamon. Keeping all of that on day three, all you got to do is cut out sugary beverages. No more sodas, no more juicy juice things, none of that. That's all you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
On day four, keeping all of that on day four, all you got to do is add in some healthy beverages so you don't get dehydrated. You want to drink fizzy water. You want to make your own fizzy water. You want to drink green tea. That's all of this. I explain all of it to you. Keeping all of that on day five, all you got to do is cut out all the crappy proteins, lunch meats, hot dogs, junky things that are full of peculiar fats and so on and so on. And so it is for the 30 days. Every day you do one thing, keeping all of that you've accomplished so far, then you add or subtract something the next day. Generally, it goes back and forth. One day you add something healthy and the next day generally you subtract something. But of the entire 30 days, only 14 of them are about food. You got to have a holistic approach. You know, if you think you can eat your way out of diabetes, you're mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
There was that study at Kaiser Permanente where 50% of the people who were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes had a clinically significant mood disorder diagnosed within the year prior. Seems like major depressive disorder, depression, is sort of like the red flag that something's going on here. We all understand that. You know what it's like to skip a meal and get irritable and upset and frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
So in 30-day diabetes cure, I talk about how you got to get up off the couch. You got to get walking. You got to do something. If all you can do is walk down to the mailbox and back, that's good enough for me. But you got to start. You got to be able to go out to restaurants. So on one of the days I have you, when you are not hungry, going around and look at the menus at all the different restaurants so you'll know in advance. You have to celebrate with your family, with your friends. You have to be able to go out and have celebratory meals. So you have to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
If you think for one second that you are going to be able to walk into a restaurant when you're starving, look at the menu and say, there's nothing on here for me to eat, and turn on your heel and walk out, you are mistaken. That is not humanly possible. So you don't have to get caught unaware. These are some of the skills that I build into the program over 30-day diabetes cure.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't even have to take my word for it. Go on the website. Go look at my practice, theonemedicine.com, T-H-E-O-N-E, medicine.com, and there's a link to the book. You'll be able to hear my patients talking about it.
Stephan, I can see where you've got then the 30 easy action steps to follow, but how did you break down into the three phases? Was that exercise, food, and something else, or did you break that down some other way?
No, the first is your body needs to be liberated from its cravings, and the way you do that is you just fast from white sugar and sugary beverages and all that, and you got to do it for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first phase of it. You can't go out and eat at restaurants for the first 10 days. You got to eat at home. Get your feet up on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 10 days is about that. Diet, exercise, getting your feet back on the ground. For 10 days, you got to live without sugar. At the end of 10 days, you can't go back to eating sugar. I'm not going to pretend you will. But you got to really put your shoulder to the wheel for the first 10 days. I call it my boot camp, because after that, you will not crave it.
Mm-hmm.
You will not crave sugar the way you do when you're eating it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second 10 days is about integrating more holistic stuff into your life, more exercise. I talk a great deal about the benefits of yoga and so on. Weight-bearing exercise is the most important way to prevent bone loss. And, you know, that's for men and women. You got to do some of that to get introduced that in. And then the last 10 days is about taking it out into the community, being a part of the community, and finding your place.
We will have the conclusion of Dr. Ripicher's interview on the next show. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving and found many things to be thankful for. I look forward to seeing you on the next show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey your host, wishing you a great week.